start the meeting, members and people in the audience. I think what I'm going to do with the agenda today, because it's a bill that probably I think should go fairly quickly, and then we're just going to lay it over. I think we'll take the Freiberg bill, House File 866, first, and then we'll take the other bills after that. But in the meantime, we do have the minutes from April the 10th. Representative Mulry, you've been doing some reading over there, I see. Well, if you spent 2 hours studying the minutes, I think you maybe want to make a motion to do something. Representative Mulry moves approval of the minutes for April the 10th, 2013. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. And Representative Freiberg, if you could explain the bill, but I will move it on your behalf, being that you're not a member of the committee. So I move that House File 866 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
I'm sorry, I believe. Oh, I see it. Then it's
just to get the bill properly before us.
Okay,
as I mentioned before, we're going to be laying the bill over. We won't be taking any action on it.
Understood.
You'll be explaining that, I think, as you go through the bill.
Yes.
And so if you want to explain the bill then.
Sure. I also have an A4 amendment to put the bill in the shape that I wanted.
Okay. The chair will offer the A4 amendment, the House File 866. Representative Freiberg, if you want to comment about what the amendment does and then explain the bill. After we adopt the amendment, then we'll explain the bill.
Okay. Should I explain the amendment?
Yeah.
You're saying? Okay. Yeah, there were
a question before.
Okay. Yeah, there were a few provisions added to the bill in the Government Operations Committee that are in the State Government Finance Omnibus Bill. They weren't intended to be to remain part of this bill. They were just included so that the Government Operations Committee could hear those provisions, and it was the understanding of everyone involved that they would then those provisions would then be taken out in Ways and Means, and that's what the amendment does.
Okay. Cool. And actually, I was moving this amendment on behalf of Representative Kahn. She doesn't happen to be here right now, so that's probably why she was interested in then. Being that she had been involved earlier, apparently.
Sure.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, now on the bill, Representative Freiberg.
Sure. I have with. Oh.
We switched.
Okay, yeah, there's a different person next to me than there was before. This is an agency bill. The Department of Administration asked me to carry this bill. It relates to procurement. There have been some late-breaking developments relating to data practices. Some, if not all, of the bill will need to be heard in the Civil Law Committee, and I understand that Representative Lesch has requested it. So that is why the bill is being laid over as opposed to having action taken here. Further, I understand. It's my understanding, and you can or staff can correct me if I'm wrong. But the three provisions that were just removed in that amendment are the only ones within the jurisdiction of the Ways and Means Committee. So it's my understanding that as amended now, the bill is not really relevant to this committee. I have people here from the department who can answer questions if you'd like any. If anyone has any, but. You know, it's basically
it's relevant because it's here.
Yeah, fair point.
Okay,
fair point. It's would you like agency staff to walk through the bill then, or?
And I think the process, so everybody understands, when you say it's not relevant, is that after the committee hears the bill, mm-hmm. the other committee, then there will be an amendment added here. Is that the game plan? This all came about fairly quickly. Maybe.
Yeah. No.
Am I understanding it correctly? What's...
Yeah, it's my understanding that that a clone bill or a bill with the data practices provisions, which may be all of the bill, is going to be introduced, and those provisions will be heard in the Civil Law Committee. And then at that point, the bill would come back here, would be taken up again here.
Okay.
It's been kind of a convoluted process on this bill.
Okay, so We are not moving on the bill pending a hearing in the other committee. Once that hearing takes place, then we move the bill out.
That's correct.
What your desire is as the author.
Correct.
Okay. You confused me a little bit when you said it wasn't relevant anymore.
I'm sorry. That was a rookie mistake and poor choice
fine.
Of language.
I get confused every once in a while. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suggest that you refer your co-Senate district representative to the tape of the bill that I had in front of your committee, which didn't belong in front of your committee, and see what the committee thought was relevant about for 55
we
minutes.
We would have to have Representative Kahn here as well, because she was most helpful in giving an orientation to Representative Mullery during his first term.
Mr.
But that wasn't this committee.
That does explain a lot.
Another... Mr.
Chair,
we didn't keep him here for a long time. He came waltzing in thinking it was going to go boom, and we had some fun. We've got an agenda today that we have to follow. Besides, I would want to be gentle with somebody that represents most of what I used to represent
right.
before redistricting. So
I appreciate
we have
that
a lot
much.
Of mutual friends.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative. Well, we actually haven't explained the bill yet. We just got caught up in the procedure. Is your question, Representative Detner?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, maybe I heard you wrong, but heard the author wrong. Has this been heard by another committee?
Yes.
Oh, it has. Okay.
Yeah. Government operations.
And it will be again. And then once that hearing takes place, then we move it out of here. That's why we're going to lay it over. But so we don't have to have the discussion twice. Let's hear what the bill is, and then when we do move it out at some point in the future, we'll have the background. So,
okay,
Representative Freiberg.
Sure. Kent Allen here is here too, and he can walk through the bill probably much better than I could.
We're still on the procedure stuff, but go ahead and explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The provisions that admin brought forward here are relatively modest changes in the state procurement law that are intended to streamline the process and use our technology better. I'm actually looking at the first engrossment when I refer to sections. Is that what you folks have as well? Okay. Looking at the first engrossment, sections 1 and 3 are intended to allow us to accept bids electronically. As most of you know, the state invested in a new accounting and procurement system that allows more things to be done online. And the sections 1 and 3 are intended to make that possible through the receipt of electronic bids as opposed to a more traditional open up a paper envelope and read it aloud process. Section 3 is a refined definition of what it means to be a resident vendor. We realized when other vendors from other states were contacting us and saying that they are legally eligible for some preferences in Minnesota state law that we think were intended for Minnesota-specific businesses. And so what we've done is expand the definition of what it means to be a resident vendor to ensure that the businesses that get the several advantages of being Minnesota businesses are more clearly defined. Section 5 is changing a process that requires agencies to certify whether state employees are able and available to do work. Currently, that has to happen regardless of the value of the contract, and what we found is that that leads to a considerable amount of sort of busy work or no non-value-added work at the agency levels. So the proposal is to raise that to $5,000, which is consistent with the language that's been in place for many years as it relates to professional service contracts. Section 6 changes the one-bid threshold from $2,500 to $5,000. This is the level at which agencies need to seek more than one bid before they can make a purchase. This $2,500 level had been set in 1998 and hadn't been adjusted since then. And then sections 8 and 9 indicate that solicitations can be advertised in a manner specified by the Commissioner of Administration and removes a specific requirement that they all be advertised in the State Register. These are two situations where this language was inconsistent with changes that have been made several years ago and kept a reference to the State Register. The folks at the State Register are quite content to let this change go forward, and it would simplify the process and make it more consistent. If you have questions, I would be more than happy to try to answer them.
Okay, and members, keep in mind that it'll be before us once the other committee activities take place. Any questions at this point?
Mr. Chair?
We're just simply going to lay it over. Representative Holbert.
I'm still have questions about the process. The part of the bill that was deleted would, for the first time, charge citizens a fee to view information. And so is that going to be part of the discussion in civil law?
I don't believe
out of the bill now. Represent Freiberg.
Yeah, I don't believe it will be. It's not part of my bill anymore. It was kind of a convoluted process, but I wasn't intending that to be a permanent part of the bill.
Well, it's my understanding that this language is also in the state government finance bill. Is that correct?
Representative Freiberg, you're on that committee, do you know?
Yes, I believe that is correct.
So will the state government finance bill be going to civil law for a discussion of charging the average Joe citizen money to view public information on a website for the first time in state history?
If state government finance bill is next stop is here, we'll have to see if that provision remains.
Well, Mr. Chair,
does that answer your question?
Not really. I think they are setting up a civil law committee for Tuesday. I think for good government and privacy advocates, they'd like maybe a little more definitive answer as to if and when this major change in public policy was going to be heard in a committee so that they might be able to participate in the process.
I was gently trying to tell you, I think that fee is going to disappear on Monday.
No, you know, I do appreciate that, but if it doesn't disappear on Monday and it's not included in whatever bill is noticed to be heard in civil law on Tuesday, and then all of a sudden it doesn't disappear, and then are we going to have a last-minute amendment in civil law to have? I mean, a lot of this is process, sunshine procedure, and I think that maybe a more definitive answer would be appreciated.
Representative Holbert, we will cross that bridge when we get there. The bill is before us on Monday, and my intent is to have an amendment that will strike that section, and so therefore it will be gone relative to the state government finance bill, because I have to keep that bill moving in terms of the timing for this committee and the floor, and I don't want to get it hung up over that provision. That doesn't mean they still can't talk about it in that committee on Tuesday if they choose, but relative to the state government finance committee, just simply because I have a calendar to meet, we'll be removing that on Monday.
And so my question then still holds is that will the bill considered on Tuesday have that information or not?
Do you mean my bill in when it's in civil law?
Mr. Chair.
Or the clone bill?
Representative Freiberg, heard the Chair Ways and Means say that he thinks that this language will come out, but if it doesn't, then it will be dealt with. I'm just wondering, will the bill that's sent to civil law have this language in it so that if there's a hearing on Tuesday on this bill, that particular language would be properly noticed and people could prepare to have the discussion if necessary on Tuesday?
Well, I think Representative Freiberg.
It's already been removed from my bill. As far as I'm concerned, it's gone, and I have no intention to bring it back before civil law.
So it's removed from this bill, and it will be removed from the state government finance bill, pending committee action, I should say that, but my intent as chair is to recommend, let me put it that way, that it be removed, and I have a feeling that that will happen simply because we have a schedule to meet where we want to hear state government finance and get it up onto the floor. So that provision would slow it down if it had to go to civil law, and therefore hopefully it's going to disappear on Monday. And I can't be any more clear than what I'm being, and it's out of his bill, so I think the provision probably is history. But
yeah, based on this conversation, I don't have a great desire to bring it back.
I think you're hearing an interest on both sides of the aisle that
don't bring it.
So, I hope I'm answering your question.
Well, I guess I, you know,
but the bill isn't before me, so I can't remove it as we speak, or recommend, I should say, that it be removed. This is a democratic institution.
Well, and I guess, Mr. Chair, it's just frustrating. I don't think that this was a late-breaking issue. The title of the bill has Chapter 13 in it. You know, people in other committees said that it should go to the committee. It didn't. So I don't really think that the situation that we're in right now is late-breaking by any means, and it's just frustrating. And
that was probably another poor choice of words on my part.
And Mr. Chair, I'll wait until we see the committee announcement for the civil law committee, I guess.
Yeah, and I can't speak to whatever the history was. I know what bill is before me today and what bill will be before me on Monday, and I can only speak to that. Okay, any more questions about the bill as amended that's before us before we lay it over? It's been mainly procedural discussion, I guess, at this point. Okay, with that, Representative Freiberg, your bill is laid over pending further notice.
Thank you, Chair Carlson and members of the committee.
We have now House File 724, Representative Paymark.
Chair, what's
we need a motion.
What's the motion? I'll move House File 724.
Be recommended to pass.
To recommend to pass order. to the General Register. I have three amendments, Mr. Chair, that if I could offer them there.
You want to offer the amendments to get the bill in the order you'd like before you present it?
I do. I have. Do you want me to explain each amendment, or just they're relatively?
Well, they're three separate amendments, so we'll have to deal with each one okay. separately. And so the first one that I have is the A4.
The A4 amendment. I would move the A4 amendment.
Okay. Representative Paymar moves the A4 amendment. Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, this is a policy provision that was modified, or I should say amended, in the Judiciary Committee 2 days ago. This was a bill that was inadvertently repealed when the legislature created life sentences for certain sex offenders. So that's all that that does.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Then we have the A5, Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, members, I would move the A5 amendment. This is a technical amendment that MMB is seeking that was inadvertently left out of the governor's bill, which I authored, and it continues the transfer of $250,000 from the gambling revenue account to the Department of Public Safety for gambling enforcement.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The A6 amendment?
And the A6 is a minor adjustment of $70,000 that you will see on the spreadsheet would go to the VCA criminal history system replacement for the in the Department of Public Safety budget, and I will explain that in more detail when we get to it.
Okay. So any discussion at this point? Discussion a little later. All those in favor?
Oh, Mr. Chair,
Mr. Marks?
I have one oral amendment. I forgot.
Representative Hamar may have it.
Oh, do you have the oral amendment?
That's on this.
Or, Mr. Chair, it was just to add adjust amounts accordingly on here so we, with this change, we get the totals fixed in the bill.
Okay. Okay,
so you incorporate that into your amendment?
Yeah, well, that actually is the A5 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Oh, that is the A5? Goes to the A5?
They both need it.
They both need it.
And 5 and 6 both.
I apologize.
Okay. So at the A6, you incorporate that into your amendment?
I do, and then also on the A5.
Well, we'll have to go back there.
It's already
technically.
Okay.
We already adopted that amendment,
okay.
So we'll have to amend. Oh, it was on it. It's on it at the bottom.
It says adjust amounts accordingly. Is that
adjust amounts
okay.
accordingly
okay.
on the A5? Yeah, that was there. It was not on A6.
Okay.
And now you've incorporated that.
I have indeed. Thank you.
Okay. So any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Now the bill is in the order that the author would like, and if you'd walk us through the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair, with me is John Waltz, fiscal staff for the Public Safety Finance Committee, and I think what I'd like to do is just walk through the spreadsheet, and the bill basically corresponds with the spreadsheet on page one of the spreadsheet. You will see on pages one and two deal with the corrections budget, and $38 million. Is for salary adjustments. That's 2% and 2% over the biennium. And the changes that you will see, we have accepted almost all of the governor's recommendations on for corrections, but there are a few changes that I'd like you to be aware of, and one of them you'll see on line 26 is the employee compensation. On line 27, this is the a bill that was brought by Representative Kiefer that dealt with sex offender penalties, and there was a slight appropriation for this biennium and as well as in the tails. Line 28 was a provision that dealt with that was brought to us by the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Again, that was what the amendment dealt with, and that's dealing with repeat sex offenders, and there's a slight cost to that in this biennium as well as in the tails. On line 29, this is a transfer. There was additional money in the fund balance for the MnCOR at the Department of Corrections. And while this was not included in the governor's recommendations, we are appropriating $3 million, or asking the Department of Corrections to spend $3 million for additional sex offender treatment beds at the Department of Corrections. And this will, I believe it will translate into 10 FTEs, but I think the committee should recognize that we have a lot of sex offenders in our prisons, and only 30% of them are getting treatment. And 90% to 95% of those sex offenders are getting out at some point, and they're moving to your district, and they're moving to my district. And It says something about, I guess, the lack of resources, but also how we're spending money, that only 30% of these sex offenders are getting treatment. So our committee felt that this was a priority, and that's why this is in the budget. It does not meet the expectations that we should have, but it gets us closer there. On page 3 and 4, also corrections, community services. We were not able to provide any additional money for probation, but we did follow the governor's recommendations. You'll see employee compensation again, 2% and 2% for community services. On pages 3 through 5 is operations support for the Department of Corrections. We followed the governor's recommendations, and again you'll see employee compensation woven through those pages. If there's no questions on the Department of Corrections, I draw your attention to page 5, public safety budget. There's a few items here that just to bring to your attention. On line 175 is the Minnesota School Safety Center, and this is a governor's recommendation providing a little over $1 million for the biennium. Some of you might remember that we had a school safety center that was federally funded at one point, and then when the funds ran out, we did not continue to fund it with state funds. What this school safety center does, it's law enforcement oriented, and it's providing technical assistance to our school districts and our schools throughout the state of Minnesota to deal with potential active shootings, lockdown planning, developing emergency plans, etc. So I think in light of what happened in Newtown and what's happened in our own schools, this is probably a good investment. Some of our committee had some questions about how we would measure success, but I think it behooves us to expend this money and have them come back periodically and report back to the department, to our committee, on how many plans are being developed and how the center is actually working. I don't know if anyone has any questions on. Do you want me just to keep going, Mr. Chair?
Unless the hand goes up, why don't you just keep going?
All right, very good. Then on page 6, you will see a couple of items that I draw your attention to. Line 200, the forensic science service-based funding. This is also a governor's recommendation. We have a serious problem at the BCA. We're having like 4-month turnaround time for data processing, and with our forensic laboratory equipment that is obsolete, this has been a perennial problem that we've had at the department, where we don't have enough scientists, and we will be hiring 4 new scientists, and this is even made more acute after the closure of the St. Paul lab. So you will see forensic laboratory replacement and staffing on lines 203 and 204, 205, 206. This money is partially coming from the general fund and also from the trunk highway fund, in part because this is used for DWI enforcement, toxicology by the state patrol, etc. So I would then draw your attention to lines 213, the Minnesota Justice Information System-based funding. This is a critical need and a priority item for the Department of Public Safety to replace the criminal history system and also to replace the crime reporting system. The criminal history system is where all of the criminal history, all the data goes from practitioners in the criminal justice system, law enforcement, the courts. This is all antiquated equipment. Some of these systems are upwards of 40 years old. They need to be replaced. You will see Also a line item to maintain our live scan machines, which electronically transfers fingerprints. What we were not able to fund, it was lower on the priority list for the Department of Public Safety, was the data analysis and analytics services. Given that their top priority was the criminal history system, the department is fine with what we have done here. On page 7, you will see there's no changes here, but you will see the line 257, the fire marshal. We did not use any of the fire safety account. On line 268, you'll see the alcohol and gambling enforcement. Again, all of the governor's recommendations. I'll draw your attention to one other area that we did make some slight changes in. Our committee made some slight changes in on line 290, the Office of Justice Programs. If you go to, first draw your attention to line 302, Crime Victims Assistance Grants, and this was the governor's recommendations, provides additional $3 million above the base to sexual assault programs, domestic violence programs, general crime victim programs. And some of your districts, you may have heard from your shelters or your programs that they've had some serious cuts. This does not restore all of those cuts that have been made over the years, but it's a needed addition, and we have that in our budget. And we provided a little more funding for youth intervention services. They are spread throughout the state. We were not able to fund them at their ask, and we have a $300,000 for a reentry program in the city of Duluth. The youth intervention program that had $1.5 million base funding, and we increased it to $2 million. Again, this is I believe this should be a higher priority. We weren't able to find the funding to do it, but if we want to be serious about fighting crime, we should provide more intervention and prevention with young people who are at risk of getting into the juvenile and criminal and adult criminal justice systems. There is a online page 9. There is for emergency communications. There is an increase for armor maintenance on line 3.24, and there's no, we just continue base funding for the post board, for the private detective board. We did agree with the governor, and we're adding two FTEs to the Human Rights Department. That's on page 10 of the spreadsheet. And this is for compliance, contract compliance. And that, Mr. Chair, if I can just maybe draw your attention to page 11. These are the transfers that were made. The MnCorps transfer to the general fund, and then the utilization of that money for the sex offender treatment beds, and then the DVS transfer to the general fund, and then the use of that general fund money for the criminal history replacement systems. Mr. Chair, that's, if you want, I can go through the bill, but the spreadsheet covers that, basically.
Okay. And are there questions, then, from committee members? Representative Fulber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Paymer, on the Trunk Highway Fund and removing the prohibition on the BCA and the tort claims, what kind of, is it a standing and open appropriation for tort claims, or is that a fixed amount?
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Waltz might be better. This is part of the governor's bill that there are two parts to Section 8 of this provision, and that was to allow trunk highway funds to be used for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And quite frankly, I have no clue about the MnDOT small claims tort reform. What that was.
Mr. Rawls, you...
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I think the section in question, Section 8 on line 9.24, was some language that was put into law in 2000 to prevent some of the use of trunk highway funds for certain uses. Since that time, the state has been spending for those two stricken uses. It has been common practice. There are some toxicologists at BCA that are funded in their base, as well as the tort claims account that's given about a couple $100,000 appropriation each biennium in the transportation bill to take care of small claims for when perhaps a section of concrete from a bridge might fall on someone's car, something that someone would make a claim. Those have been used for those purposes every year since this was put into law. Striking these two uses from this prohibition just brings the state in into compliance with the law, but these will be fixed appropriations. The tort claims account is set as a fixed appropriation in the transportation bill, and we have a fixed appropriation in BCA each year to fund some of these toxicologists and laboratory equipment replacement.
So if I might, for clarification purposes, the department has been ignoring the law for 13 years?
Mr. Walls?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I'm not sure that anyone was, I don't know if they were aware. This was something that MMB brought forward in the bill this year to strike this from law. I mean, it had been appropriated in these bills, and I don't know that people were aware that this was in law, that those uses were forbidden.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Walls, if you know, do you know how much money over these 13 years has been appropriated in violation of this standard?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't recall the tort claims account appropriation. It's been a while since I served on transportation, but it generally was either $125,000 or $200,000 a year times 13 years would be, you know, $2.6 million or less. And any unused money would cancel back to the Trunk Highway Fund. In terms of BCA, their current base is about $1.9 million a year from the Trunk Highway Fund, and so perhaps somewhere south of $26 million.
If I might, I wasn't able to follow this issue in your committee, but given the what some believe very large exposure of the Department of Public Safety for financial penalties because of all the data breaches in their systems, was there any discussion in your committee about that issue, what the cost may be, and is trunk highway money on the line for paying for this? Or?
Mr. Chair? I'm Representative Holberg.
Kind of an odd
situation with DPS in that part of the division is actually Representative Hornstein's committee, and that would include DVS, and so we had no discussions about it because it wouldn't come out of this budget. I'm sure Representative Hornstein, well, perhaps that question's better asked of him, but I suspect the state is going to be on the hook for some money if some of these lawsuits are brought against the department.
Well, and Mr. Chair, while it was DVS's information, DPS is the one that administers most of this programs, provides training or not. It's my understanding that the commissioner is involved in many lawsuits and many more to come. So while it's true that the DVS portion is in the transportation bill, I think that from my understanding of what's already in the pipeline and what's coming, the exposure to DPS could be very great. given that they're the ones that run the program out of the BCA and hold a lot of this information as well.
Mr. Walsh has some information, Mr. Chair, that it's helpful to that's some language that's in a different bill that deals with this.
Mr. Walsh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, on line 397 of the spreadsheet, we're showing $20,000 of revenue to the Special Revenue Fund, and my understanding is that in a separate policy bill, and I must apologize, I don't know the House file number, there's a separate policy bill that is traveling where DPS is now going to require as one of their efforts to secure data criminal background checks on any employee at the department that would have access to these systems and this information. And so I'm not aware of all of the steps they're taking to secure data, but that's the one that we know of that has any relevance to this bill or spreadsheet.
And so, Mr. Chair and Mr. Walls or Representative Paymar, so this revenue would be then generated from private entities like tow truck drivers or private investigators, or where is the special revenue coming from?
Mr. Walls?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I believe these background checks, it would be, they would only apply to employees of DPS. So the revenue would be coming, there may be some outside entities that have to have background checks at the counties, and it might be the counties that are paying some of this money, but it's only state government employees that have access to this data must undergo a background check.
And so, if I might, thank you, Mr. Chair. So where's the revenue coming from then?
Anyone who employs someone with access to this information will pay the fee, I believe, to BCA to get the background check information.
And, Mr. Chair, will that include local law enforcement agencies and other components? So will the State Patrol be using trunk highway money to pay the BCA for background checks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I'm sorry, but I can't answer that question.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, is this other bill your bill, and do they get married up? Or
Mr. Chair, we have Representative Holberg. Ms. Ellison from the DPS maybe can answer it. It's not in my bill, and I don't have an omnibus policy bill. Again, these are sort of an odd division between my committee and Representative Hornstein's.
Ms. Ellison.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Ellison, Deputy Commissioner. The answer to your question, Representative Holmberg, is no. Trunk highway funds will not be used to pay for these background checks. This is a requirement actually to come be consistent with FBI requirements and also some of our commercial driver background check compliance. That it's an FBI standard that people who conduct background checks for their agency undergo a background check themselves, and the cost for that is simply represented here. It's basically a zero net effect. The entity pays the cost for the background check for the person that will be doing the background check, and then that revenue is used to pay the FBI for the background check. But there is not any intention to use trunk highway funds for that purpose.
And Mr. Chair, so then is this just a pass-through, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, yes.
And so where in this spreadsheet will we see the expenditure of this money?
Well, my understanding in the spreadsheet is my understanding from MMB is that we had to reflect this both as a revenue and as an expenditure. So although we're collecting the revenue, you see in 14-15 that there's an expenditure there of $20,000 per year for $40,000 for the biennium.
Mr. Chair, my question was, is I'm aware that you're showing the revenue on line 397. Where on the spreadsheet are you showing the expenditure?
I don't know where that is.
Mm-hmm. If you are.
Mr. Wallace, do you know the, or Ms.?
I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair, this was the one question we didn't expect.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might, I have another question that Representative Hamer might be able to answer that's not
well,
quite money that...
Looking for the answer to that question.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Holbert.
Thank you.
There are some other people have questions.
I know. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
I know you believe. That's why I... But, I mean, we do make sure that Representative Beard and Detmer and others get a chance to ask a question.
Mr. Chair, I understand this, but it's an omnibus bill, and sometimes are a couple issues we'd like to.
As the lead Republican, but I do just want to make sure we get the other people's questions in as well. So, Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Paymar, given the first bill that we had introduced and the fact that it's an agency bill having to do with MnIT and databases and how out of left field, according it was, relative to state data practice standards. I see in your bill you're putting money in for computer systems and database updates. To what degree are you satisfied that these expenditures will be done in a way to conform to the data practice standards in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, am I personally satisfied? Representative Holbrook, I share, as you know, similar concerns about the way data is obtained and used. You know, this criminal history system is replacing an old system. It's not something, I don't believe that it's, something that we currently do. It's replacing a system that's 40 years old that can't do it anymore. And, to be frank with you, I mean, when you think about offenders who, you know, whether they're sexual offenders or gang members that... I mean, it's important that the criminal justice system has information about them, quite frankly, and the systems are old, they're obsolete, and do we have the proper oversight? I can't answer that, but I would be willing to take this a step further, because I share your concerns. We just had a committee hearing, as a matter of fact, in my committee on the pointer system, which, as you know, is fraught with problems and is not being used currently, but they're going to be seeking additional money to reamp that, and so I think we should be cautious, and it's probably a good idea for our committee to examine this as it gets built up.
And Mr. Chair, I'm bringing this forward as a point when we discussed a data practices bill about databases and accountability. We heard over and over from highly paid lobbyists and people in state government that their systems weren't able to track use, that there were no audit trails, that they weren't able to provide the accountability that you see in most private sector computer systems. And my hope was that MnIT was putting in place standards that would change that. I'm not sure they're doing it, and so maybe on a bill-by-bill level, when we make these major investments in infrastructure, we should start putting some basic standards of operation and accountability as minimum requirements. into those systems.
Mr. Chair, maybe Mary Ellison could Ms. Ellison could provide Assistant Commissioner?
Deputy Commissioner,
sorry. Ellison could provide you just a brief overview.
Ms. Ellison.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me state again that I have in other committees that what happened with the DVS system wasn't a situation where we didn't have an audit trail. It was a situation where people had access to private data as part of doing their official job as police officers and chose to use that system for reasons other than their professional responsibilities. So it wasn't that we didn't have an audit trail. We have audit trails. We have security systems. People have to verify who they are. People have to go into the system, and it says right on the screen when you enter the system, you can only use this for your professional purposes. But I don't want people to come away thinking that we can follow 12,000 police officers and 300 law enforcement agencies and 87 sheriffs around the state and make sure that they never enter the system, and even though they're committing to not using it for other than their own professional responsibilities, that we just can't watch over their shoulder every minute. But it isn't a situation where we didn't have an audit trail. And certainly we are stepping up and working in cooperation with the police chiefs and the sheriffs to better flag people who are perhaps looking up more than what you would expect their numbers should be each month. We've done that over the years. We're going to continue to do it. The situation with the DNR really was a wake-up call to everybody that even people who maybe are responsible for conducting background checks need to be followed up with. But I really want to emphasize that more than a technology issue, this is a management issue, and it's managing employees and making sure that employees are handling their professional responsibilities appropriately. So we will be putting in all of the security requirements that are considered best practices as we implement the criminal history system and the crime reporting system. And we will, this money goes to Minute now because of the consolidation, so Minute will be working to build these systems, and I would certainly hope that they would use the latest and best security practices.
And Mr. Chair, I don't think I ever said that your system didn't have an audit trail. What I said was that as people came to testify on a bill that would have put accountability into these types of systems, we heard over and over, cities, counties, school districts, I've had MMB in my office, Revenue has a appointment scheduled, Department of Health, over and over again, how their systems are not able to do what we would like to see is put in some accountabilities in place. Your situation, yes, you have an audit trail. You have a whole different problem. You have a culture problem, not a computer problem. But in other areas of state government, we definitely have just the technology problem, and we have to stop investing money in computer systems that don't have these controls in place. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll defer to somebody else that has questions.
Okay. Representative Beard, you've been patient.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's as the former chair of the Transportation Committee and now the lead Republican on Chair Hornstein's committee, I was really interested in Section 8, but the line of questioning that Representative Holberg had pretty much answered the questions and shed the light I was looking for. So tomorrow morning we'll take up Representative Hornstein's bill and we'll look at these things again, I'm sure.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I have to share right now is just some information for the committee and for the author of the bill, and maybe just to communicate from the State Government Finance Committee, which I'm the lead on the State Government Finance Committee, is that we had a bill, House File 1241, that passed through the committee, and it was passed to the Public Safety Committee. We didn't get a hearing, but I would like to have the people at least listen to what this bill entailed and what it meant to a certain group of people that have served our nation. It was an appropriation, 1241, it was an appropriation for de-escalating training for community safety personnel that deal with our community safety personnel, could be police officers, fire to people, first responders that deal firsthand with some of our veterans when they come back and they're suffering some problems that they've have with their lives. And this training is going on across the country. And this group came into me and wanted to bring this training to Minnesota. And so they were asking for appropriation for each year of the biennium for public safety for the grant for the Upper Midwest Community Institute for Training Minnesota Community Safety Personnel, and included tribal entities and about the use of de-escalating techniques for dealing with veterans returning from military deployment from combat zones. And I would like to have had a hearing, Representative Paymar, in your committee, but you know, we didn't get it. I understand it. It would have been nice to have that part of this bill. And I know Representative Holberg, we discussed this yesterday as we put out the bill for the state government finance and veterans. We that bill will be coming to this committee, I think, next week, I believe, Monday. And we might be addressing that then, but it really should have been part of your committee, Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Paymar.
Representative Detmer, my committee administrator is going to check into this now, but I did not know of that bill, quite frankly, I'm not sure if you submitted a committee, if you a request for the bill to be heard. I'm not sure if it when it happened, if it was close to deadline or not meeting deadline, but that, you know, I would have certainly heard the bill. I think you know from a prior bill that I'm not sure if you were the author or someone else was the author that we heard. Mm-hmm. Was that Mr. Kiefer? I'm not sure, but we did pass on to the House floor that also dealt with veterans who have PTSD, and I'm very supportive of what you're trying to accomplish. And if there's money available, I don't within our budget or another budget, I'd be more than happy to support that. We have thousands of veterans coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq with PTSD, and they're some of them are getting in trouble with, and the more training that we have in the criminal justice system and law enforcement to recognize and intervene in an effective way, I think would be very appropriate. But I just want to say I don't remember seeing the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair, what would be the policy of somehow getting that part of one of these two bills, whether it's with the would it be something that could stay with the state government financed, or would it be? I just have a question.
Yeah. Well, it's a brand new issue for me. Sounds like something we would probably all be supportive of, but the question would be the amount of money and how it would fit within targets, I guess, at this point.
Right.
Representative Mulery said he had a comment on this particular issue.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Representative Detmer. I totally support that. I was the one that did all the work over the interim to get the courts set up for the veterans back a few years ago. However, this is a bigger issue, and I don't think it's fair to just fund it on working for veterans. I think we need to do this for mentally ill people to have law enforcement understand how to work with them, and I've had a bill in, actually, your party turned it down completely too, so I hope you would get your side to take this as a big approach, not just for veterans, but for mentally ill people also.
Mr. Chair, maybe I misspoke. It's not just for veterans. It came through an organization that has concerns with the veterans, but it would be for, the money would be spent with the safety officers, the safety personnel for any type of, you know, there would be classes they would be taking. It's a training program for the safety personnel.
And Representative Detmer, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, that's probably the same roughly as the bill I've carried in the past 2 years.
I was just, Ms. Conley is the committee administrator for, as you well know, for state government finance as well as this committee, and she indicated that apparently Representative Murphy is working on some language. Whatever that means, you may want to have a conversation with her as well. And in terms of your basic question, you know, we'd have to see what cost factors are and so on.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to bring it to the attention. I know Chair Murphy is very diligent in looking into this.
So you may want to visit with her then and see what the status of whatever she's working on is. Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Pamar, the question I'll be asking for each finance bill is what are the fee increases included in your finance bill? And then how many new FTEs do you have as part of this? And I saw one of them. I didn't know if there was any more FTEs than that. So fees and FTEs.
Representative Pamar.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, there's only one fee, and it's revenue neutral on page in section 12, and that deals with the compliance certificate for businesses with the Department of Human Human Rights, and it's but that's revenue neutral, so we did not increase the fee. And there are 26 FTEs that we're adding in our budget. Again, as I said earlier, the 10 for the new sex offender beds in the Department of Corrections, the four laboratory staff at the DCA. There'll be five FTEs to set up and work on the new criminal history system and the new crime reporting system.
No, I'm just saying this year is year of education.
And there are five FTEs for the school safety center and two new FTEs for the Department of Human Rights for their contract compliance staff, so a total of 26.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Pamar, for that. And I hope that everybody knows all the finance chairs coming forward. I'll ask that same question every time, so thank you so much.
Yeah, you announced that earlier. And most of the people that are here on our side of the aisle are chairs, so I suspect they have a heads up on that question. Representative Holberg, there was one question you asked that was kind of left hanging. I don't know if Mr. Wallace was able to identify that or not. Mr. Wallace?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, currently as the bill stands, the agency would be absorbing that cost. The spreadsheet, if we wished to take care of that cost, should reflect an additional $20,000 a year to the BCA out of the special revenue fund.
Representative Holder.
If I might, so as the bill is right now, that special revenue is going into the general fund?
Madam Chair, no, the revenue is collected. It's just not appropriated to the agency. And that the collection is in the special revenue fund.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Pamar, on the school safety center that we were talking about here, how is that different than the $1 million that is in the school climate center for under the K-12 education finance budget?
Representative Pamar.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, I'm not really that familiar with the $1 million for school safety in the K-12 bill. This came up in our committee. Representative Mullery brought this issue up also. We want to make sure that we're not duplicating any interventions here, but as I understand it, the difference here is that this is very law enforcement specific, and it does not have any so I don't really know.
Okay.
If somewhere down the road, Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, we can figure this out. I certainly don't want to duplicate services.
Yeah, and we had an earlier conversation about that today, and just exactly what Representative Pamar indicated, we don't want to duplicate services, so we're going to have that conversation. I don't know much, because I haven't seen the K-12 bill, what theirs is. Representative Mullery did share with me at the start of this meeting a little bit of the language on that, but
just a real quick comment, Mr. Chair. The Department of Public Safety promised to get to me within a few days an explanation of how these are alike or not alike. So as soon as I get it, I'll get it to Representative Woodard.
Okay, thank you. We'll sort that out, the K-12 bill will be before us next week, so we'll have an opportunity to address it in that forum as well, and hopefully Representative Mullery will have the information prior to that then. Okay, any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then Representative Paymar renews his motion that House File 724 be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. And the next bill is Representative Atkins' bill, and I would just mention to members, being that the weather isn't the best today, that if we are fortunate enough to get done with Representative Atkins' bill, then we won't have to return after session. But we do have room reserved just in case. I don't want to squelch any discussion, but brevity might help in that regard. Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, message received. I will move the House File 779 be recommended to pass and refer to the general register, and then there are a couple authors' amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and you want to take, let's see,
the A17 amendment.
I think is the first one in the packet. So, the A17 amendment, that short one that you told me about.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is this piece of it was peeled off in the first committee to be carried by Chairman Huntley. It's the Affordable Care Act conformity provisions, and literally that's all it is Minnesota was required to adopt certain pieces that conformed with federal law. There are no additional substantive changes in the amendment other than what Chairman Huntley has carried through committee already. And with that, I'd be happy to turn it to, I think he should actually move the A-17 amendment since it's actually his bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Huntley, you're moving the amendment?
I would move the A-17 amendment. And just to be very brief, the Affordable Care Law passed and and there's all kinds of things in there that relate to insurance policies that are being sold all over the country. And because of the Interstate Commerce Clause of the Constitution, the feds have the ability to trump anything that's in our laws. So what this does is adapt Minnesota law that so all our insurance laws related to health insurance and HMOs are in compliance with the federal law. The big advantage to that is then that means that we can enforce the federal law and our laws in this state and not turn everything over to Washington to come in here and administer our things. There's no fiscal note to this bill, but it does adapt our laws to the federal laws. And again, this bill is traveling as a single bill in the Senate, so when we get done here with this amendment, I think Representative Atkins and I will hum together again.
Okay, very good. The motion is before us. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Representative Huntley, you mentioned that there's no fiscal note. There's a fiscal note in our packet. Is that still a relevant fiscal note?
That's for... staff reminds me that's for the bill.
Oh, for the bill. I'm sorry.
Not for the amendment.
I apologize for that. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion?
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Holder.
Can you clarify the bill number of this and where that bill is in the House?
I'm not quite sure what the bill number is, but it's been through a couple of committees, Commerce and the Health Committee, Policy Committee, and then was sent to the, I believe it had to go through rules, and then it got sent to the floor, so it's on the floor.
It's House File 978. Right,
thank you very much.
Our efficient staff had that right at their fingertips. okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now you have a second amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move the A18 amendment. There's one minor change to that I'd like to incorporate, and that is a deletion of lines 2.10 and 2.11. So with that incorporated change, I would move the A18 amendment and would be happy to provide a little bit additional explanation, Mr. Chairman. It's a literally the bill, and then these particular amendments are now the product of hundreds of hours that have been put in by various stakeholders from industry, from the consumer-oriented groups, from the departments, and others. And the changes that are made here bring peace in the valley, as Representative Davids, who just entered the room, likes to indicate. With respect to some of it's just purely technical changes, but there's also agreement on metal levels, information disclosures, marketing, accreditation, and network requirements, as well as open enrollment. That's what the amendment does. I am not aware of, other than perhaps some technical issues like the deletion of line 2.10111, that's Representative Abler is still working on an element that I think he's working with some of the industry and department folks on. But other than that, I'm aware of no other significant changes to come. And this will now put the bill in the shape that brings peace on the prairie or peace in the valley.
That motion is before us. Any discussion, Representative Abler?
Oh, not the amendment to the bill later.
Oh, okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. The A18 amendment is adopted. Representative Atkins.
And Mr. Chairman, then to the bill as amended, the most important thing I think that I can probably say today is the market rules bill now with the ACA conformity, but the market rules are market-wide. This is not designed, and I know that there's been concern that was raised when we were moving the health insurance exchange bill through, that the exchange would wag the, you know, wag the dog, and that the exchange rules would somehow dictate to the overall market what was going to happen outside of the exchange. We in this bill have now expressly prohibited the exchange from dictating rules that would apply outside the market. These rules apply to both plans that are being sold inside and outside in the areas that I've just described in terms of network adequacy, accreditation, marketing. And again, I just mostly want to thank the industry folks, the consumer-oriented groups in the department. Literally hundreds of hours now over the course of several months have gone into this, getting to this point where they are on board with respect to the elements of the bill. And with that, I'd be happy to stand for any questions or concerns that members may have.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Abler yet?
Yeah, thank you. Add to the bill. Well, Mr. Chair, and just for members to know that, humming and wagging are terms that wouldn't have been described, that used to describe this bill in the beginning. It would have been, Def Conrad and disaster remediation. So it's I commend the author for his work. Just maybe if you could summarize a little bit. I haven't followed your latest work, but if you could just summarize, you mentioned adequacy and some of the certification matters, and I don't know if the plans are going to come and testify. If they're not going to testify, it's a testimony to the work that's been done. This has come a long, long ways, and so it's a tribute to the author. But maybe just comment just on just the list of things that are
sure
covered that are going to be kind of new. There, it's an HMO standard that's being spread out to the regular plans, or not just a couple minutes worth, just so people might be listening at home. I'm sure they're following this with eagerness.
I suspect they are, and probably people tuned in specifically today, Mr. Chairman, to see this bill. I'll talk primarily about some of the things that have been agreed on since the last meeting. We've got. With respect to metal levels, that's now what we're now using catastrophic bronze, silver, and gold metal levels to describe the actuarial value plans that are being sold. It will now require issuers offering a catastrophic or a bronze plan to also offer a silver and gold plan within the same market and service area. Previously, the language required silver and gold to be offered across the board. Than gold to be offered across the board. This language now allows carriers to choose to offer only one plan, but it would need to be at least a minimum silver plan. For folks that understand these issues, that really does have meaning. It's not just about some Olympic level value. Information disclosures was something that, whether it would be on water bottles and all the various things. So we've figured out that the required reported enrollment and disenrollment data to be considered non-public. That's something that Representative Holberg would likely be concerned about. What I referenced with water bottles was actually regarding marketing. Removes evidence of coverage disclosure requirements. Accreditation is another piece in the amendment. It requires the health carriers to comply with any requests from the health commissioner to confirm accreditation progress. In replaces, there was an attestation requirement that was added in a previous committee, and that's been replaced. Network-wise, it removes language that indicated health plans would not be denied network adequacy because the only hospital in the area was more than 30 minutes or 30 miles. I think, Representative Abler, in a previous committee that you serve on, that was something that we talked at great length about. It also updates the wording of one of the subdivisions regarding specialty services. Changes the waiver expiration to expire after 4 years, and that was 2 years. That last piece relative to expiration, I'm not exactly sure why that was important, but it was. Then open enrollment-wise, it adds a requirement that issuers notify applicants when they apply and enrollees annually of the open and special enrollment periods so that potential customers know when those open enrollment periods actually are. That's what the amendment does, if you want, we can go through, but those are the changes, which I'm guessing is what you were probably most particularly concerned about.
Mr.
Chair. Well,
and I thank you for that, and I guess that's the blood pressure of the lobbyists in the room that reps on HMOs is probably 120 over 80 today compared to 180 over 120 or something in the first hearing and the concern. And so I signed on to the bill in an effort to help it to support the efforts, knowing that we have to do these kind of things. And aside from the source of this bill, which is the ACA, I think members should feel comfortable in voting for it today.
Thank you. And Representative Anderson? Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, then Representative Atkins renews his motion that House File 779, the third engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you. And a little shorter than the last time you were here, I guess. But,
a little bit shorter.
Well, you're part of the committee, but I mean the last time you were up there. We get together where we meet tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and it's going to be an ambitious agenda, and we're going to be working on the bills until we're done. That's what I was meaning earlier. It's going to be necessary to keep these bills moving. But we're going to have Omnibus Environmental, Natural Resource, and Agriculture Bill, the Omnibus Legacy Bill, the Omnibus Judiciary Finance Bill, and then a bill by Representative Hansen dealing with sick leave policy. So pretty ambitious agenda, but we will be here until we're done. So have a good evening, and we'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Meeting adjourned.